we ought to, I think, speed on. I'm conscious that Councillor Devinck has to leave at 12:30, and I may well bring forward item 11 so that can have a proper discussion before that time, and then we'll revert to the agenda as set out. So far, I have apologies from Lisa Beattie. Councillor Milliken? Likewise, thank you. There being no new business for consideration, declarations of interest? There being none, let's move to the minutes of the meeting of 17 September. We first just consider their accuracy and completeness. Are we content? Obviously, there are some matters arising in the agenda. Are there any other matters arising? Take them as approved. We move to item 5, the Corporate Risk Register, quarterly update. Gary?
Audit Committee has requested regular reporting on the corporate risks, and I suppose I go back to the training day that the committee had, seems a while ago now, but where we really focused the work of the audit team, and I suppose the work then of committee really all hangs from the corporate risk register. So the report in front of the committee today just sets out the highest risk facing the council, and the top three are highlighted in section 2.2 of the report, which is around corporate change and transition, the impact of welfare reform, and the challenges in the current economic climate, and the public sector spending environment of balancing our revenue budget in particular. The risks of safety civil contingencies manager regularly meets with service managers and heads of service to review the service risk register as well as the corporate risk registers. And we're going through a period at the moment of really pretty much a root and branch review of these risks at present. We've brought today an update on where we are with the corporate risks at this point, but the idea is that as we move into the new calendar year, we would bring a more comprehensive the more comprehensive outcome of the review that is currently underway to committee. The appendix to the report, starting at page 11, sets out the risks, the scores, and the notes, history, etc., on those. And really, today we're asking committee to note the 13-14 quarter one report on corporate risks. Whether there's anything that committee feels should be added to the corporate risks or any views or for changes in the risk score. Happy to pause there and take any questions on the detail around the risks in the appendices, Chair.
Thank you. Just some commentary. The risk register is a very important document for making cohesive the work of the Council and the work of this committee. And one of the ideas that we're developing along with the progress of this document is that we use it as almost a score sheet for the audit committee so that we can see in what areas of the risk register we've actually had reports and done work. And that will indicate also areas where we haven't done any work and perhaps we should be considering doing work over the longer term. So it acts as a central control document for this committee and give more shape and purpose to what we're able to achieve here. As always, if anyone has any risks other than the ones listed, please let us know. I take that as an adoption of this document as an ongoing affair.
Yeah.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Chair. Just very briefly, it would be helpful, maybe that it's here somewhere, but I can't spot it. The meaning of the headings like the original score, risk score, I think it goes from 1 to 23, is that? Right, and the current risk likelihood, I don't know what scale that's on, or the risk impact, and the target risk score, what the meanings are and whether higher numbers are better or worse. The only one I'm familiar with is the original risk score and the current risk score.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Councillor Baxter's right to highlight that we haven't put the context of these scores on the report. They have been in previous reports to committee, and I'll ensure that as we bring forward further reports, we just refresh that information. The higher the score, then the higher the risk. The original risk score was the risk attached to the risk as it's presented in the risk description, and the current risk is really where we see ourselves after the mitigations that are detailed in the report. So once we've taken forward the actions, what's the residual risk that we're carrying? And the higher that residual risk, then the more we need to focus our actions to try and reduce that. And ideally, we want to get to a situation where we understand our corporate risks, we've taken, and the council and the audit committee are comfortable that the mitigating action we've taken takes the residual risk down to a level that the council and committee are willing to carry and take the burden of that risk going forward.
Thank you for that. Can we now move to item six, the Code of Corporate Governance, and can I ask Hilary to talk to this?
Thanks, Chair. As set out, this report proposes a revised draft Code of Corporate Governance for 2013-14 and seeks Audit Committee's review before this is presented to Council for approval. We originally set up a Code of Corporate Governance in May 2004, and it has been revised only a couple of times since then, in 2006 and 2010, and then some very small minor amendments were made in 2011. Ideally, this should be carried out annually, and certainly the proposal is that we will do it annually going forward. A self-assessment has been carried out this time in relation to the SIPFA and SOLAS guide from 2007, and the self-assessment aims to demonstrate that we have the documentary evidence and that we have an action plan in place. So the scoring for each of the elements is as set out in paragraph 2.1 there, which shows whether we're not compliant or partially or fully compliant or in fact exceeding the requirements of the code. So the full self-assessment is attached to Appendix 1, which is on page 23 to 35. This self-assessment has shown on this occasion that the Council is fully compliant in a number of areas. We've avoided scoring that we're exceeding the requirements because we can't necessarily demonstrate our consistency across the board. So that's something that we want to work towards. The draft Code of Corporate Governance is attached at Appendix 2, which is pages 37 to 53. And that reflects the full self-assessment and also includes an improvement action plan, which is on page 40 and 41. Part 2 of the code then describes fully the principles of good governance, and part 3 identifies the Council's policies and procedures that are essential to demonstrate our compliance. So in accordance with the Council's standing orders and scheme of delegation, Audit Committee is required to review the code and the annual assurance statement, and Audit Committee is duly invited to do so today.
Thank you very much for leading us into this very comprehensive document. Can I ask, apart from the full Council considering this, is this an item that Audit Scotland will look at as part of their reviews?
As part of the annual assurance statement, they can be provided with a copy of that, yes.
But largely it's a self-generated self-assessment based on the SIPFA standards.
Yeah, we've chosen to use the SIPFA and SOLAS guide as a self-assessment tool. That hasn't been the way that it's been done in the past, and what we ended up with was a very lengthy document in the past, and we've tried to make it more concise and easy to read this time and to clearly identify the areas where there are actions required to bring us up to the fully compliant standard.
So in short, this makes us compliant with best practice in Scottish local authorities?
Yes, and as you can see from the self-assessment, it links together with all the other documents, including the Single Midlothian Plan and all the various sort of corporate plans and service plans that we have. This pulls it all together, provides that annual assurance, and that is provided by our internal auditors to external audit annually.
Chair, it's just to perhaps mention that external audit required to review governance arrangements annually. And we bring forward a report on external audit's view and the effectiveness of governance each year. So that will come in due course.
So this is a key document for you as external auditors as well. Are we as a committee content with this document? I'm very impressed by its extent. Thank you very much indeed. Item 7, progress report on work completed by internal audit.
Yes, thank you. This report presents the work that internal audit has completed since April 2013. It shows the work in progress and the audits which are left to complete this year's audit plan. Audits underway are grants paid out by the Council, business transformation, which is looking at governance, balancing budgets and people strategy, and council tax billing. There are a number of audits that have not yet commenced, including welfare reform, risk management and payroll. Our current assessment, however, is that we're on course to complete this year's plan. A further update will be presented to the January Audit Committee. And the Audit Committee is asked to note the work done and the work that remains to complete the year's plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Graham. That's a touch on the pulses of the internal audit group, who have been very busy, as you can see, and completed 8 reports against the 4 that they were expected to. Are there any comments? We are due to have a report on the business transformation shortly, I believe, which is very important to the agenda of this committee.
Yes, we're working on that now. It's obviously a big audit because we're looking at sort of 3 areas, but work is in progress and will be reported shortly.
Councillor Bryant.
I just want to make a comment on page 59, investigations, petty cash. I just wonder if there's anything to worry about in there.
Catch 22 question. Graham, Elaine, was there any particular thing or event that triggered this concern? I mean, all organisations are worried about petty cash for the usual reasons.
There have been 1 or 2 incidents of money going missing from petty cash. The sums aren't great, but we've seen a sort of trend. And also, I think we're keen to understand what exactly is going through petty cash, just to make sure that it's the right kind of expenditure, and it's not something that should be going through procurement.
Is the issue liable to be a lack of vouchers, or is it vouchers for inappropriate expenditures?
It's hard to say yet, because obviously we haven't done the audit, but we'll be looking at both possibilities.
Councillor Bryant.
I see there's a report due in January, so we'll wait for that then.
Yes, I think that's probably when the audit will commence, so it may be slightly later than January before it's issued.
Yeah, obviously, apart from any sums that might be involved, it's a reputational thing if cash is slack. We move on to item 8, the consultancy protocol being suggested. Graham, Elaine.
This report identifies the need to establish a protocol for internal audit where there are requests to undertake investigations or consultancy work which are outside the current internal audit plan. Last year, just as an example, we had 4 investigations on our plan, but we actually became involved in 8, and this can obviously delay completion of our audit plan. The report basically suggests a method for assessing requests for internal audit resource and also details an appeals process. The audit committee will be kept informed of the number of investigations and consultancies undertaken against budget and alerted if any audits within the current plan are to be delayed because of additional work requests. The audit committee is asked to approve the investigation consultancy protocol. Thank you.
So it's essentially a filtering mechanism so that the work that you do is not overwhelmed with ad hoc requests, and we have some concept of prioritisation.
Yes, that's right. I think also under the new code that internal audit works to, there's a requirement to notify the audit committee if any investigations or consultancies are going to impact on the delivery of our plan.
Mr. Ray?
Yeah. There was one bit, a little bit on the wording that made me slightly uneasy in four, which was right at the very beginning of that section, where the internal audit manager will make a decision on whether to undertake the review. That just worried me slightly. Should that not be in consultation with somebody, with yourself? And I'll come back to the right back to the reporting mechanism here, where we've got internal audit. Who do they report to? Who are they accountable to?
Well, we report immediately into Gary, but we also have a line to Kenneth and to the audit committee. So, as I say, I think if there's any question, we would always try and undertake the investigation or consultancy. It's just that where our budget is nearly used up for that type of review, the audit manager would have to make an assessment and prioritise. But if it was going to impact on the plan, we would always bring that back to the audit committee.
Still relatively happy, but... And I'll come back to my point I've made on a few occasions. I do not think that the internal audit should report to the person of Gary, but to that position. I think there should be a different reporting mechanism, a different reporting line.
That's a thought that's in line with the prospect that audit committees are expected to take a much more leading role in the future than they have in the past, something we heard about at the training day. If the committee here had a different set of priorities, how would it express itself and how would that get into the system under this proposal?
Basically, there is an element of the audit plan which can be specifically driven by the audit committee if they feel that internal audit should be looking at something. There's always those free audits in the year. So if there's any suggestions, we'll happily take them on.
But in terms of your own workload, there will be a prioritisation mechanism as a result of this paper. That's the main outcome.
Yes, as I say, it's just a mechanism to stop internal audit being snowed under by investigations or consultancy work which impacts on us delivering the audit plan that's been agreed by the audit committee.
Gary.
Just to reiterate that, Chair, I think it goes back to the corporate risk register report we had earlier in terms of the work of the audit team focused on those risks and the internal control and the governance arrangements around those risks. And what we wanted to do through this protocol, really tying in, you know, following on from the public sector internal audit framework that we agreed at last committee, was to put a mechanism in place to ensure that whilst we'll give due weight and attention to investigations on specific issues that arise, which will always arise, that they don't impede the work of the committee in terms of delivering the audit plan that you've set for the internal audit team to deliver.
Comes from your head.
I can understand that from a practical managing the workload perspective, but I think the concern probably here is, you know, we do have an influence in terms of the planned forward workload, if you like, and what areas we're going to be looking at. It's when things come up that are the sort of things that we've looked at relatively recently, where there are no planned things, there are issues that there's been a request to have internal audit have a look at. How does this committee fit in terms of being able to influence that kind of work? If you take a scenario where an employee or an individual or a number of elected members have raised an issue, according to this, the audit manager can decide whether they're going to, you know, looking at the workload, whether they're going to pursue that or not, take that on or not. How do we affect that? How do we challenge that decision, I suppose, is the question.
Yeah, good point. Kenneth?
Yes, thank you. I mean, I think that it's the same point that's been made by Councillor Muirhead and Mr Ray as well. It's about whether the audit manager comes to that view entirely independently and whether there needs to be perhaps some consultation or... And I wonder if... I'm thinking about this in a hoof to a degree, but whether it should be that the decision is made, but that is there is consultation with the chief executive and or the chair of audit. And the reason I'd say both is that, I mean, even take our recent example of Exbridge, there might be a view around the table that I would have a view on that, and it would have been appropriate to go to the chair of audit, and on another issue might be appropriate to come to me. I mean, and that's a suggestion. It's just, it's a fallback, but I'm prepared to take any views on that.
Yeah, that's quite a good illustration because you were to some extent personally involved with Esbridge. As chairman, I would have always wanted an investigation of the issues there, which struck me as possibly having systemic implications for Midlothian as a council dealing with land issues. On the other hand, I hope I don't tread on any toes, the amounts involved in the Dalkeith car park struck me as meaning that should have been an issue that was dealt with somewhere else. So there was a prioritisation issue for me on that, if we must have examples. The conclusion I'm coming to is that everyone realises there is a need for prioritisation in the work we do. On the other hand, we don't want to cut off the ability of councillors who are so close to the electorate to react to issues that arise outside the predictive audit cycle. So the ability to come through me or through Kenneth and to say, well, it doesn't look as if we're going to be doing a report on this, but actually I think it's really important. I think that route has to exist and does exist. I think the question is whether we need to formalise it any more than our existing arrangements.
The problem is that how, if the decision not to pursue a particular audit is taken by the internal audit manager in conjunction with, say, Kenneth, how do we know about that issue? Where do we fit into that? How do we know that that has even been considered? That's the difficulty. If it's a, you know, I can understand why there may be instances where Kenneth, for instance, couldn't be involved and it would have to go to yourself as chair of the committee here. I just, if that isn't the case and Kenneth is, how do we know that there is an issue there? How do we make a judgment as to whether it's relevant or not?
I would have thought the normal protocol, if a councillor asked for an investigation and it was decided it wasn't material enough to proceed, that they would certainly be told that decision had been taken. And then that councillor would be able to bring the matter to this committee at the beginning of the meeting and challenge it if they wanted to.
So not all every member is a member of this committee.
That's true.
So that's not necessarily us that's going to be raising the issue.
Chair, perhaps what I would suggest is that we would, as part of the regular report that comes forward from the team in terms of the audit plan, we would highlight within that report that not only the investigations that are ongoing or have been concluded, but anywhere we've had requests and have not been able, not prioritised them. And that would then give the committee visibility around that whole agenda. That way, I suppose what we've been trying to do in this protocol was to avoid the other scenario, which is that every request has to come to audit committee for its consideration and for that to be the decision-making forum. So perhaps the protocol, the amendment that Kenneth suggested, and the visibility through the audit plan report would help committee adopt that framework in terms of a practical way forward to prioritise things. And there's always within that, the regular report that comes back to committee, the option to say, well, we actually don't agree with that and we now want that to be prioritised, and then understand the impact it has and the visibility, the impact it has in terms of the overall audit plan.
I very much agree that audit proposals that are not immediately proceeded with should be brought to the attention of this committee, so we should know what's happening beneath the very high level issues that we are wanting to talk about. Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Chair. I share very much Councillor Muirhead's concern about this. Perhaps the protocol, or out with the protocol, there should be a risk assessment carried out on each request, and then that could come perhaps to yourself or to this committee, and we could decide on the basis, because if it's a small amount of money that the council say is at risk of losing in the worst case scenario, then it's maybe lower priority than something else, which could be lower probability of having an impact, but the impact could be much more severe.
I think that essentially is what's being proposed as a sort of taxonomy, a list of priority factors within the document we have here. I toyed in my own mind with, you know, should we have a score sheet and score things 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and all that, but eventually that ends up being very subjective and mechanistic and perhaps goes too far in the other way.
Yes, we do, behind this paper, we do actually have a risk assessment, and we have values and things to attach to likes of financial impact, and that helps us to make our assessment. But I mean, we get approached by managers throughout the council to do things like help them sort out their paperwork and things like that, which we try, you know, if you have something like this, it's easier for us to turn around and say, you know, we haven't got the resource to do that kind of thing. It's not really an audit function. If you use this this table that we have to assess whether that's high priority, we just wouldn't be. So, you know, we do get a lot of requests from all over the council, from managers, from members, from Kenneth, from directors. So it's just a way of us to try and prioritise the very precious resource that we have.
My proposal is we should go forward with this paper for a trial period of a year and look at it in a year's time, on the basis that anything that we don't decide to investigate immediately is brought to the attention of this committee, so that there's an opportunity, if there's a general feeling that something should be lifted up in its priority, then we're able to rectify that.
And can I be clear, Chair, is that the paper as amended in terms of the consultation with myself and yourself as appropriate, and also the proposal from Gary in terms of how that's then covered in the regular update reports?
Yes, and the noting of those items which have been deferred.
Chair, can I just be, just to raise this as an observation or comment, one of the things I've been really pleased about in this discussion has been protecting the independence of internal audit. So the internal audit manager still remains as the person who's making the decision about whether or not to proceed. So the wording of that will be critical. So it would be consulting with you rather than the decision is being made by either the audit committee chair or chief exec. I think that's what I heard, but it was just really to be clear.
Yes, I'd certainly confirm that. At the end of the day, it's to your unit to prioritise effectively to get the best bang per buck for the taxpayers and the electors. Are we happy to move on? Item 9 is the Accounts Commission's reports, which are summarised and noted and are available online. Doubt we'll need any conversation on this. But I encourage you to have a look at one or two of these, especially if it's an area of interest. We're making reasonable progress such that I think we can move on now to the item 10, Treasury Management. Gary?
Thanks, Chair. We bring the report today, which gives an update on the Treasury management activity for the first half of the financial year, together with forecast activity for the second half of the year, and an update on the Prudential Indicator Framework reflecting the latest capital plans. Section 3 details the activity in the first half of the year. A reduction in the rate of interest on external investments compared with the same period last year, and it really reflects the current market situation in terms of returns that are able to be had on cash out in the market. We locked into £10 million of long-term borrowing to fund capital expenditure during the first half of the year, no debt rescheduling, and really the approach we've taken because of the challenging low investment return is to use our cash reserves to fund capital expenditure in the short term. We would only then be looking to lock ourselves into longer term public works loan borrowing if we see rates starting to trend upwards, but they're still historically low rates for long term borrowing. The tables on page 70 of the agenda set out where we are in terms of the borrowing we have and the investments at the end of September. In terms of the second half of the year, we still expect to fully conform to the Treasury Management Strategy. We've got short-term investments maturing in December, and as I touched on earlier, we would use, rather than reinvesting that money, we would use it to fund on a short-term basis our capital expenditure. So we're not really expecting any long-term borrowing unless we see an upward trend in rates. Section 5 sets out the update on the potential indicators from those that came to Council in February. Key issues around that is it's really just the capital financing requirement and the underlying borrowing requirement. And I would ask that the strategy that we have continues to not restrict borrowing. The Treasury Management Strategy sets an authorised borrowing limit at £291.9 million. And that allows us to borrow up to the forecast 15-16 underlying borrowing requirement of £303.6 million, if the market conditions support it. So we're able to plan ahead in terms of our borrowing, depending on market circumstances. And really gives me as a Section 95 officer that flexibility. In terms of today, we're asking Audit Committee to note that we are still achieving a better than benchmark return on our investments, despite the reduction. To note the report and also the revisions to the prudential indicators in Section 5. Since the report's been written, we've also received the latest information on the benchmarking data across Scotland in terms of the last financial year. And the Council has continued to be the best performing Council in terms of its loan fund rate, the lowest loans fund rate across all 32 Scottish local authorities. So I have to pause there, take any questions.
Mr. Ray.
Thanks for the report, Gary. I really enjoyed reading that. I just cut my teeth into it. And the economic part of it too, the economic indicators are absolutely fascinating. A couple of queries, see if I could, just to see if I'm reading this properly. On page 83, 5.1, we've got current position of capital expenditure is... That's as 15.2 million. Is that as at what date? 30th September? And then we're expecting 42.26 million spent by 31st March 2014. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the revised estimate for the current year, 42.26 million.
And the 15.2 is as at 30th September or the half year?
It would be at the half year, yeah.
So we've got 27 million to go over the next 6 months. Okay. I then flick back to, if I could, on page 71, which is paragraph 4. As at 31st March, our total investments will be down to 9.9 million, and at September 31.7. Is that the reason why we've got such a dip with that outflow in the second half?
What we're taking the opportunity to do is we would, the choice is to the combined total of £42.2 million expenditure that expenditure in the second half. One option would be to borrow that and lock ourselves in long term from Public Works Loan Board. What we're doing is, instead of investing our cash reserves, we are using them to fund that in the short term.
Right.
That explains the dip in
the difference
cash
in
investments.
In the drop.
Cash reserves, another matter, but cash investments being used to fund capital expenditure.
But we'd still have the flexibility to borrow some more, because 9.9 million strikes me as quite low.
Yeah, if market conditions were such that it was logical and best value to lock ourselves into long-term borrowing, we would do that, and then we would then find a home, albeit at a low rate, for our cash reserves.
Yeah, curiously, my concern is the opposite, that we may be planning to borrow too much. You are wanting to raise the underlying borrowing requirement to 313.6 million, obviously in advance of some capital expenditures that are still in the system, the houses and elements of the PPP starting to ratchet up. Are we much more advanced funded than other Scottish local authorities? Is there anything unorthodox in this approach?
No, by utilising our cash reserves, we are far from being advanced funded. We've actually got a lag. We'll have incurred more capital expenditure than we've entered into long-term borrowing commitments for. The flexibility, the 313 million reflects the borrowing required to fund the capital plans that Council has approved over the long term, and the flexibility there is really to reflect them, to allow us to make sure that we can access long-term funds as and when it's appropriate to do so in the market and not have to defer back to Council. So, that perhaps shared with you before, that the Public Works Loan Board rates change twice a day. So we need to be very flight of foot in terms of making hour-by-hour assessments sometime as to when the right time to enter into long-term borrowing is. And bearing in mind these borrowing commitments are entered into potentially up to a period of 60 years. Provide flexibility within the framework and within the framework of the capital plans that Council has approved to ensure that we can continue to fund that capital investment at the lowest cost possible. And I say that the benchmarking stats we've got show that we continue to be the best in Scotland at doing that.
Yeah, that's very pleasing. Councillor Bryant?
I was just wondering what the risk was of the interest rate for borrowing suddenly rocketed up like it did back in the 80s to 15%. Is that likely to happen with the Public Works Loan Board?
The projections that we have through our Treasury advisors, based on a number of commentators in the market, are not indicating any real movement in base bank base rates for the foreseeable future. Things can change overnight, and again, that's an element of the flexibility that's within the Treasury strategy. So that if something untoward happens in the world economy, we can react and react quickly. Clearly, any fundamental increase in rates to those sort of levels would require us to consider our financial plans, never mind our Treasury management strategy, in terms of the affordability of the capital investment we plan to make.
On that point, approximately the 313 million, how much would be at fixed rates over the long term? How much would be fluctuating rate?
All of the long term borrowing that we've been taking by PWOs is locked in at fixed for. We'd lock in at fixed rate, and we'd look at the rates across the period that you can borrow from 1 year up to 60 years, and we'd match that with our maturity profile to spread the risk of loans maturing in the future.
Question on the relationship between our cash position and the revenue account. Of this 313, how much are you reserving to cover deficits in the next 3 years on the revenue account, which have to be funded?
The 313 million relates to the potential long-term borrowing to fund capital plans. The investments relate more to our cash reserves. We'll see a report going to Council on the 5th of November that will give an updated projection of the unutilised reserves across general fund and housing revenue account, and it's those cash reserves that are available to council to fund unforeseen revenue costs or indeed to meet one-off revenue expenditure pressures.
That goes back to the surplus we have available for unforeseen events, which of the order of 6.4 million, I seem to recall.
That's correct, yeah.
Can we accept this report? And again, congratulate you for the very fine coupon that Midlothian seems to be able to attract. Item 11. Now we need a short pause as this item is not recorded and is subject to confidentiality.
It is recorded, Chair. It's just recorded in a different file.